try something new today and do this from my iPad. But since it's an experiment, I have my backup, just in case. It's always such a joy to be back here at Unity, so I thank you so much for being here and for welcoming me back today. I'm sure you've heard many times, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Sometimes that may be a literal teacher, but more often there is a life situation that challenges us to grow in ways that our soul knows that we need to, whether or not we've been consciously aware of that need. And very often the catalyst in our lives to grow is change. Something in our life changes either outside or inside of us, and we need to respond. And it turns out that how we respond to change often matters far more for the journey of our lives than even the change itself. The title of the talk this morning is The Alchemy of Change. And it's something that I've been thinking a lot about and very much needing to live into in my own life, especially since I lost my husband to leukemia about a year and a half ago. Alchemy was the medieval forerunner to chemistry, and its goal was to transform base metals into gold. In a spiritual or metaphysical sense, alchemy is an inner process through which a lower or lesser expression of ourselves, of who we've been up until now, is transformed into a higher or fuller expression of who we've been created to be. So our question this morning is, how can we use change as an invitation, opportunity, and challenge to heal, transform, and grow into more of who we can be and who we long to be? Given that the pace of change, both in our individual lives and in our collective lives, seems to be accelerating at an amazing pace, this question has never been more vital. In order to understand the alchemy of change, we need to distinguish between two words that are often used interchangeably, although they are in fact very different. And those are the words change and transition. Change refers to a shift in the circumstances or situation of our lives. And this shift can be external. For example, getting a new boss at work, getting married, having a baby, moving to a new home, losing a loved one, losing a job, facing a health challenge or crisis. Or the shift can be internal, a sense that something significant is changing inside of us. For example, a job or a career that we may have loved and had great passion for may begin to feel stale or lifeless. We sense that the way we've always been and always showed up in a significant relationship in our lives just no longer feels authentic. Or we may sense that we are reaching the completion of one stage of life and are ready to move into the next, the way a teenager begins to move into adulthood. Or for many of us at this point in our lives, beginning to move into elderhood. Whether the change is internal or external, it demands a response from us. And this initiates the process of transition. In the Jewish tradition, there is a teaching that said that every blade of grass has an angel standing over it and whispering, "Grow, grow." And life is always inviting us to grow into all that we're meant to be. And that's especially true in times of change. So transition is the process we go through to come to terms with change. The process we go through to let change change us. To let change change us so that we step into a fuller, more authentic expression of ourselves. It always involves letting go of the way things used to be and allowing what is becoming to emerge. And in between the letting go and the new beginning is a period of time, often a very long period of time, in which we experience primarily uncertainty and a sense of not knowing who we are, not knowing where we're going, not knowing what really matters anymore. And this middle time can feel very disorienting and very unsettling. The late author William Bridges, who spent several decades of his life studying transition in both individuals and organizations, described transition as a three-stage process. The first stage is letting go of an old situation, form, or way of relating to something, which means that all transition really begins with an ending. We often don't recognize in the moment of ending and the moment of letting go that that is the beginning of the birthing process of something new. But that's what sets it in motion. After the letting go, we go through an in-between time that Bridges calls the neutral zone, where the old no longer exists, but the new has not yet come into being. And finally, the third stage of transition is beginning something new and coming to embrace and integrate the new situation or way of being that emerges in our lives. Many of the spiritual traditions includes stories of this three-stage process. For example, the Israelites wandering for 40 years in the desert after being released from slavery in Egypt and before they can enter the Promised Land. Or the Easter story, where between the crucifixion and the resurrection is the mysterious dark time in the tomb. It's also the case that the ancient rites of passage rituals of every indigenous tradition follows this same three-stage process. So there's something in this process that is already deeply imprinted in the human psyche. And on a soul level, we already know and in fact deeply trust in this process. Yet we may also find ourselves resisting one or more stages when they show up in our lives. We may resist the grief and loss involved in letting go of the old. We may resist the confusion, uncertainty, and experience of not knowing, which is certainly not comfortable for most of us, of the neutral zone. And we may also resist the risk and fear involved in beginning something new. But eventually, we need to accept, experience, and move through each of these stages if we are to successfully navigate change and grow in the ways life is calling us to grow. If we fail to do that, if we fail to engage the transition process, if we simply go through change rather than grow through change, we find ourselves repeating old, unsatisfying patterns and habits again and again. We've known people like that. They always seem to be going through changes. And yet, because they don't actually do the inner work of transition, no matter how many changes they go through, nothing in their lives really changes. Know people like that? Ever been someone like that? So let's look just a little more closely at each of these stages. In the first stage, in letting go, the essential question is, what am I being asked to let go of? Often, this question is much less about outer things than it is about inner ways of being, about attitudes, beliefs about ourselves, old identities, and old ways of relating to life and to the world that no longer serve us. In fact, sometimes people let go of outer things. They quit the job. They leave the relationship. They move to another city as a way to avoid the harder, deeper task of the inner relinquishment. In 12-step rooms, they call that making a geographic. But unless we really do the work of letting go of outmoded self, we generally simply end up recreating our old circumstances in a new form. So what really matters in the letting go stage is the inner relinquishment we're being asked by life to make. We also resist letting go because we're afraid to move into the second stage of transition, the neutral zone. Marilyn Ferguson in the 1980s wrote a classic book called The Aquarian Conspiracy. I'm dating myself here. And the book was about personal and social transformation. And she wrote, "It's not so much that we're afraid of change or so in love with the old ways, but it's that place in between we fear. It's like being between the trapezes. It's like Linus when his blanket is in the dryer." There's nothing to hold on to. And in fact, the neutral zone can feel like the space between the trapezes with no net underneath us. This is the 40 years of wandering in the desert. This is the time in the darkness of the tomb before Easter Sunday. It's the chrysalis time, when the caterpillar has completely dissolved and the butterfly has not yet formed. When we're in the neutral zone, we're likely to feel confused, unmoored, simultaneously pulled back to the past and called into the future, unsure of our footing, lost, feeling our way along in the dark without any of the old familiar landmarks to guide us. And almost always, this in-between time goes on much longer than we want it to or believe it should. The French writer André Gide pointed out that we don't discover new lands without consenting to lose sight of the shore for a very long time. Although much of the time in the neutral zone may feel barren, empty, even chaotic, it can also feel at times open, exciting, profoundly creative, and pregnant with possibility. The spiritual muscles we need to develop in the neutral zone are the muscles of waiting, of cultivating patience and trust in a larger design for our lives, of developing the capacity to rest in the space of not knowing, while also remaining alert and attentive to the smallest stirrings of new life. During this time, we listen to and follow the small intuitions and inner promptings to try something new, to go someplace we haven't been before, but without any attachment or investment to these new explorations having to lead to something or bear fruit. Instead, we learn to approach our lives with an open mind, and we pay attention to what enhances our sense of aliveness. And we follow the energy of what brings us alive. And we discover, after what can feel like a very long time of wandering in the desert, glimmers of new life and a new way of being, a new, more authentic sense of ourselves and of how we're called to offer our unique gifts to the world. These little glimmers begin to become clearer and come more into focus. William Bridges describes this sometimes as, you know, those pictures in children's magazines where you need to find objects in the drawing? So there's George Washington's face climbing up the curtain, or a fox hiding in the flowers underneath the garden. We see something that has been there all along, but that we didn't notice or weren't receptive to before. When that happens, in the same way that the letting go process asked us to be willing to leave the security and familiarity of what we've known New beginnings also ask us to move beyond our comfort zone and to say yes to ways of being in the world that are new and unpracticed, that we're not yet good at or comfortable with. In her memoir, When the Heart Waits, Sue Monk Kidd writes about her midlife transition. One day, as she was praying for guidance and help in sorting out what was going on inside of her, she looked up and saw a cocoon, and she recognized that that was a symbol of and companion for her own journey of transformation. She kept that cocoon over its long months of preparation and gestation. And finally, a butterfly emerged. These are her reflections after witnessing the butterfly come out of the cocoon. When the time is right, the cocooned soul begins to emerge. Yet, as we enter the passage of emergence, we need to remember that new life comes slowly, awkwardly, on wobbly wings. Isn't that a great phrase? New life comes on wobbly wings. I waited many long months before I felt newness begin to form, and many more months before it began to unfold in my life. Gradually, oh so gradually, my waiting season came to an end. Many of the questions I'd lived with began to sprout little seeds of insight. Light trickled in. A new vision and way of life began to take shape not only in my head, but in my heart and soul as well. Changes, deep psychological and spiritual changes, started to make themselves known. Those changes took a lot of getting used to. Emergence is like that. We have to grow used to our newness, even as we wear it. A new self is being born, and sometimes it takes a while to recognize her. I remember the space of time it took the black butterfly in my study to become airborne after emerging from the chrysalis. She gave herself time to unfurl her wings, pumping them back and forth. And her first flight wasn't exactly a study in elegance. We need an adjustment time like that, a time for wobbly wings. It can go on for a long while. During this time, we learn to be patient with ourselves. We give ourselves time to integrate the changes. The best advice I ever received on this subject was from an older woman who'd been through many cocoons and many pairs of wings. The woman touched my cheek with her hand and said, "Love your wings. Above all, we need to love our wings." So I'll finish this morning with a blessing from an author named Ron Pevney. So allow yourself to really receive these words as a blessing. I want you to know that you can trust the process. You can trust that there is a pattern for your growth built into your psyche. like the pattern for the proverbial oak tree which is built into the acorn, the pattern for who you can grow into and what you can contribute to the world, is built into and known by the soul dimension of you. You can trust that you can let go and will not be left with nothing. You can trust that your times of feeling lost, disoriented, adrift, and without a clear, meaningful identity are the times when the seeds of new life and meaning are gestating within you. You can trust that new meaning and life will emerge, that your darkness will give way to the life-sustaining light of dawn. Your inner work of transformation will result in the new beginnings that bring you alive and allow the spirit within you to shine forth ever more brightly. Amen. And so now, with this faith and this trust, we allow ourselves to enter into the dark, fertile womb space of the in-between. We let it be okay to not know, because God knows. And that's all that matters. And we allow ourselves to rest. Deeply rest. In the certainty and trust that a wisdom and love far greater than our own is directing the larger plan for our lives. And in this space of deep rest, we hear the ancient words, "Be still and know that I am God." Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. from the depths of this stillness, we hear the voice that has been with us since before the beginning of time, calling to us. You who are beloved of the One, be still and know that I am God, loving you, watching over you, guiding you in this moment, in every moment of your life. Hear my voice. Feel